Hello and welcome to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances from our special Bowery perspective. At Bowery, we start every event with an honor native land statement. We would like to acknowledge that Bowery Poetry Club rests on the traditional lands and waters of the Lenape people, and we give respect to the Lenape and their elders past, present, and future by speaking in the Lenape language, Anushik, which means thank you and welcome. Anushik.
Hello, welcome to Traffic of Europe Radio. I'm your host, Joe Williams, and today we've got a fascinating episode for you with one of the finest and most highly renowned contemporary Portuguese poets and his translator. But rather than have me introduce myself, I'd rather let them do it themselves. João, could you please start off by giving us an introduction of yourself?
I'm a doctor, reconstructive surgeon, for nearly 30 years. And as you know, I write even before I was in med school. So I can say that I am a writer longer than I am a surgeon. I start using my pen earlier than the scalp.
Okay, great. Thank you. And joined with us today as well is a translator. Calvin, could you please also introduce yourself?
Definitely. My name is Calvin Olsen. I'm an American. I currently live in Edinburgh, Scotland. Been here for about a year. I'm a very fledgling poet and a not quite as fledgling translator. I've been João's translator for probably about 6 years now. I'm also a student. I'm doing a PhD through North Carolina State University. Mostly I go to school and when I'm not learning, I'm trying to translate all of João's great work.
Great. Thank you both so much. We're going to hear some poetry that João's written and Calvin has translated soon. But the first thing I wanted to talk about, João, was I was actually very interested in what you just said, because my first question was going to be, to what extent does your work as a doctor, does your work in hard sciences inform your work as a poet? I'm always very interested in that interaction of people who kind of have one foot in the world of science, a lot of objectivity, in fact, and another foot in the world of poetry and art and subjectivity.
In terms of subjects or themes of the poems, I don't have much poems talking about medicine or talking about patients or even surgeries. But I find that the process of eliminating when I'm operating in reconstructive surgery, or when I'm writing, or better, revising a poem, is somehow similar, because in both arts I try to eliminate the excess, what we call fat in surgery, and also try to be concise, try to be elliptic, try to be economic in poetry, is somehow a similar process of what happens in aesthetic surgery, for instance. And in both arts, writing and operating, we try to hide the scar, meaning that I try to hide the places in the poem where the sentences are glued, are by a process of collage, for instance. And in surgery with the skin, it's similar. We write in the skin before the surgery, and then we cut in our drawings. So you can also establish a similitude between paper and skin.
Thank you, João, for that answer. Yeah, interesting, the parallels, the comparisons you made between surgery and poetry, in how you have to be brutal in how you're cutting things off from the text, the fat that doesn't need to be there, what's not necessary, to hone it down and refine it down to its kind of its most vital components. Interesting comparison. And turning to you now, Calvin, you and João, you've been working together for quite a while, I understand it. And you said you're also a poet, but you're probably more experienced as a translator. So how did you first come into contact with João's poetry? What was the nature of your first meeting with João's poetry?
Sure, great question. Yeah, I get to name drop when we do this. So it was, yeah, João was introduced to me by Robert Pinsky, the poet and translator who currently is at Boston University, where I did my MFA. The MFA program at BU is just 1 year. It's really fast in and out. And I started my translation work when I was there, translating Alberto de la Cerda from Mozambique in Lisbon. I chased him around, actually, by following him to Boston. He passed away a few years before I got there. But Robert knew that I'd do some Portuguese translation, and João reached out to Robert to touch base. I don't know if João was looking for someone specifically or if it just came up organically, but I received an email and was put into touch with João, and he sent me a few things and I translated them, and we started the back and forth, and it's just gone from there. So I'm very lucky in that João gives me time and space to do the work, and I get the final say, but he also is really helpful when there are places where I get stuck, or there's a phrase from Portugal I didn't learn yet, and he helps me go through the rough patches and then lets me go again. So it's been a really, really helpful collaboration. I think he writes a lot in terms of form the way that I write, with shorter lines and smaller poems and a fascination with what the words are doing. There are ways we don't mesh as well, but we just took off from there. So I was lucky enough to know somebody who was put in contact with him, and we went from there. And I think we had lunch once in Washington, D.C., I think.
Yeah.
João was there. So we had met in person a handful of times, and I'm on his side of the pond now, so we'll keep going. But João is prolific. He's got great work. I have a great backlog and new stuff coming out before I can get done with the other stuff. So we have a lot of fun.
Great. Good to hear that you have some compatibility as author and translator, because it can be a slightly contentious relationship sometimes. So in terms of João's poetry, I understand that you're currently working on translations, Calvin, of one of João's collections, which came out in 2020 on the Portuguese publisher Quetzal, with the name Movimento, which means movement in English. And this is the book which I first found and which introduced me to João as a poet, not knowing the name, not knowing who João was, or that he was a very highly renowned Portuguese poet. I just picked this collection up and really loved it. So would you like to go ahead and read us a poem? And feel free, by the way, to introduce the poem if you would like to, if you feel it would improve the reading experience, if you contextualized it or explained it all, or don't. That's entirely up to you.
Estas pedras, ruínas assim dispostas, levam séculos a conseguir. Incêndios e terremotos mostraram idêntico afã e rigor na construção. O lugar de cada pedra, cuidadosamente escolhido pela regra do azar. Há capitéis pelo chão, numa Macedónia de estilos, pousados na própria sombra. Uma antologia de pedras é bem matéria para sombras. O próprio tempo se detém quando coincide com o espaço. Seria uma quase heresia mudar estas pedras de sítio sem autorização do tempo, o arquiteto do acaso.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And Calvin, please go ahead with your translation.
Sure. So this is these stones. Ruins left in this condition take eons to perfect. Conflagrations and earthquakes demonstrated identical eagerness and rigor in their construction. The place of each stone carefully decided by the rules of bad luck. Capitals litter the ground in a Macedonia of styles, resting in their own shade. An anthology of stones is great material for shadows. Time itself pauses a moment when it coincides with space. It would be almost heresy to move these stones from their place without the authorization of time, the architect of chance.
Thank you very much to both João and Calvin, who just read poems from João's 2020 collection, Movimento, available in Portuguese only at the moment, but Calvin is trying to remedy that. In a book called Movement, we open with a poem about something decidedly static, i.e. stones. So what's the meaning or what's the inspiration of stones and their kind of timeless or static nature? What did you want to communicate with the poem?
To answer that, I have to explain a little bit of how do I organize a book. And I write during 1.5 years, for instance. Then I try to find a theme looking at the era of times. I try to find something that connects all my production during those 1 or 2 years. And this time I decided I would organize the book in days of the week, starting with Saturday and finishing with Friday, which in Romance languages still have the names of gods and planets, like the day of Saturn, the day of the sun, the day of the moon, and so on. And try to realize what, in pagan tradition, what those gods, planets, meant for even before the Romans. And it's known that the sun is connected with creation, the moon is connected with melancholy, the Mart is, which would be Tuesday, is connected with war and determination, and Mercury, which would be Wednesday, is connected with intelligence and negotiation and adaptation, and Jupiter, which is Tuesday, and in the Romance languages is Jueves or Jeudi, for instance, is connected with the law and with expansion and with opportunity. Friday, which is Venus, Vendredi, is connected with passion and love. And Saturday is connected with time and a pause to reflection. And I try to give the book a narrative sequence, starting with a thesis, which would be Saturday and Sunday. An antithesis would be Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. And then a synthesis, like in the theater that you have in dramaturgy, you have 3 acts. The last part would be Thursday and Friday, which would be Jeudi and Vendredi, or Jueves y Viernes. And that would be the synthesis of the book. So the book starts with the stones, because I decided to start with Sunday. And the curious thing about this is that this isn't the sequence by which the planets are on the sky. The pagans, or before the Romans, they changed the sequence. And I found curious that there's a conflict starting at the beginning of the week, that then it's solved by negotiation, it's established by the law, and finishes with love and passion, and then the rest, and everything starts all over again. And what I did was to put my poems in the day of the week that I thought that was most appropriate. So you read the book and you have a narrative, you have like moments, ups and downs, and you feel that there's the establishment of a scenery, then a conflict, and then it's a resolution, and then it starts all over again. And I think that's a movement during the week that goes on and repeats itself. That's the structure of the book, and that's why the book starts with quiet and with stones that are connected with Kronos, the god of time, or Saturday, the god Saturn, which I thought appropriate to put the poem of the stones beginning.
Thank you very much. So there's a kind of dialectical process then within the book with the antithesis and the thesis and the synthesis. Excellent. Calvin, did that strike you as a reader when you first read the book, the 3 acts and the dialectical process? Did that come across to you?
The dialectical process did, for sure. It's really interesting because in English, we've destroyed in so many ways the beautiful romance language of that. And so as I looked at the sections of the book, I'm trying to decide between Saturn Day or the Day of Saturn or Saturn's Day. There's so many different ways to do it. Saturn's Day feels like it will be a little bit too in your face, too. I don't want to do all the exposition, if that makes sense. So looking at Saturn Day or Saturn's Day, it just becomes a really interesting, like Joao said, there's a movement through it. And there's no, with some of the other collections that I've translated, there feels like a lot of rhyme or reason. And this one feels much more fluid. And so moving from poem to poem is seamless in ways that are hard to replicate in English. And so that's one of the joys and the difficulties coming along, or to do this, to show the 3 stages, having a great explanation from Joao by that helps me. I'm about 2/3 of the way through And so moving into the synthesis, yeah, I'm just looking forward to that even more than I was at this point.
Wonderful, thank you. And João, how did you arrive at this concept, at this form? Was it something you'd been working at for a very long time? Or where did the inspiration come from to write this book based on Days of the Week in three acts?
Actually, I was visiting a church dedicated to São Martinho de Douma, which was the bishop in Braga in Portugal, who decided that in Portuguese, we would no longer call the days of the week day of the moon, day of Mars, day of Mercury, day of Jupiter, and day of Venus, but we would call it segunda-feira, terça-feira, quarta-feira, quinta-feira, and sexta-feira. His idea in the Middle Ages was to eliminate the pagan symbols and to highlight the Christian symbols. So I decided to subvert that and go back to day of the moon, day of Mars, day of Mercury, etc., etc. So it was visiting a church that I decided to go the other way against the church.
Great, wonderful, thank you. Maybe we could have another poem from the book then.
Tomates caídos na berma da estrada. Ao conduzires para sul, depois de cruzares o rio, é provável que a vistes, onde a planície começa, tomates na berma da estrada. Tomates esfarrapados, inúmeros, dispersos pelo chão, caídos da caixa aberta de tratores a transbordar, instáveis nas curvas fechadas. Semelham-se a poças de sangue, nódoas de um assassinato, provas de alguma luta, alguém em fuga do norte para o sul libertador. Mas são apenas tomates, que também vais querer esmagar, sob um sol abrasador que vai ardendo lá em cima, enquanto alguém lhe deitar lenha.
And thank you, Joe, and go ahead, Calvin.
Sure. Tomatoes fallen on the roadside. If you drive south after having crossed the river, it's normal to see, right as the lowlands begin, tomatoes on the side of the road. Shredded tomatoes, scattered red over the ground, shaken loose from open boxes, on tractors traversing the tight curves at a tilt. They resemble puddles of blood, smudges of a murder, evidence of some skirmish, someone fleeing the north for the liberating south. But really, they're just tomatoes you're also going to want to squash. Under a scorching sun that keeps burning overhead while somebody feeds him firewood.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for your readings. Calvin, I think you said that was your favorite poem from the collection.
It is.
Why don't you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, this is one of those poems that it fits perfectly within the trajectory of the book, but it's also an outlier at the same time, which is really interesting. Just, I love this image that is already past, but it remains present. João was extremely good at this in his poetry of evoking things based on looking at the quotidian, the everyday, and then looking at the processes that bring that to pass, so to speak. So seeing this image of these tractors rather than trucks that have brought these tomatoes on a road that have then splattered across, it's hard not to go immediately to that space where this is. So there's no specific mention of a place. There are lowlands, there's a river, there are geographic markers, but we're not in any specific place. And having been, João has a collection we have that's coming out, we're thinking in the next year or so, from Hidden River Arts in Philadelphia. So it's his book, Mediterranean, and that's set in the Mediterranean all around it. So I have all of this nostalgia inside of me for João's previous work, and it shows up both in the imagery and also just the feel of this poem. So between that and just getting to translate this image and also the wordplay, it's all of the fun things happen at the same time. And so that results in me in just a great poem regardless. And having, as any translator knows, having great source material that's the best thing, because the rest is gravy, so to speak.
Sure, absolutely. I can identify with some of what you're saying, because one of the things that makes it impossible for me to forget that I live in Portugal is that there are lemons rotting on the floor everywhere I go. And for me being English, I'm like, why are the lemons rotting on the floor? Does nobody see them? Why aren't we taking them home and using them? So yeah, that's something that I've tried to write poetry about too. What does that image of seeing lemons, big, nice, juicy lemons rotting on the floor mean to me? But I haven't quite captured it because I haven't quite figured out exactly what it means.
Joe, can I add something to this answer? The choice of this poem helps me to illuminate a particular aspect of how the poems came. In fact, this situation described in the poem happened more than 40 years ago when we drove from the north to the south, not by highway, but by national roads. And nowadays we drive in the highway, so we don't really see this kind of scenery, which happens in Ribatejo, a little bit north Alentejo, next to Lisbon, so to speak. But what happened was that we were kids and my father was driving to Algarve and we were passing near Santarém and we really saw the tomatoes on the street and we asked my father to crush the tomatoes and he tried to drive around the tomatoes not to crush them. And the kids asking, we were four asking, drive through the tomatoes. And he tried to drive around. And when I was writing the part of Tuesday, Mars, I was looking for images of war and images of revenge. And it came to me that crushing the tomatoes with the double meaning that it has for males would be a nice image. But the funny thing is that the poem, as Calvin knows, finishes with a kind of allusion to God, which is very odd. It's kind of a Charles Simic ending, saying that the sun will burn since someone puts firewood in it. So it's a recollection, and at the same time, it's very useful in the book to display an image of war, revenge, anger. And like Calvin said, it's in a full crawl place in the book, and it does the job to talk about Mars.
Sure. Thanks for that information. So, Calvin, you hinted in one of your earlier answers that translation obviously throws up challenges, which can be enjoyable if sometimes frustrating and hard work. When translating this specific book, what were the specific challenges related to this specific book? And these can be like linguistic, these can be specific words, or they can be more like meta-textual, like you said, joining the poems together in the way that you get this kind of single movement through the poems, or however you want to answer it.
Sure. So some of the difficulties, I generally take translation, especially of João's work, as I just take it as a game. And knowing João and knowing his work so well, translation being the ultimate close reading, that I have a feel for his voice. So the pacing and some of the word choice and other things like that have come a little more easily this time, which has opened up some interesting challenges. One that I'm just always working on and that I've had many people question is because it's difficult to do. João uses parenthetical asides in really fascinating ways. And a lot of them, sometimes they could just as easily remain in the poem, where as the speaker, as I hear them, and as the translator, I see, so there's an aside that just continues rolling, right? The language comes off of your tongue in ways that sound like it could just be a continuation. When you go back and read it, you see how, to steal his metaphor, João has spliced in and taken out pieces of this thing. I'm a really big Frankenstein nerd. It's part of what I study. The sewing together of texts, which works as a phenomenal metaphor for what we do, both in the creation and the translation of it. So that has been one where I really enjoy them and I want to do them justice so badly. I want to be able to do what João does with them and project that into the English, and doing so is relatively difficult at times because once in a while I will get hung up, and the one we just read, the tomatoes poem, is not one of those. There are a few in the middle of the book where I have to specifically go through and I will translate the poem and then I just let it sit for a while. My process varies book to book. And Movimento has been really fun because I'm actually splicing out the parentheticals, translating what I have, and then putting them back, seeing if it still makes sense, if that makes sense. So it's not, I don't print them out and cut them up. If I had more time, I would probably do that. But that's one of the, like I said, it's the most difficult and most fun part of the game currently. And Movimento uses them. That's one of Joao's stylistic things that I just fantastic and work really well for him. So I like to, like I said, do them justice, but also I focus a lot on those because the poems themselves are so interesting and moving that it's not difficult to get into the overall plot or what is the poem about. But actually, the language itself is highlighted in this one in ways that it always has been to a degree in Joao's work that I've done and the collections I've finished, but it's a new beast this time and it's really fun.
Thank you so much. And Joao, what's your perspective on the translation process and the relationship between translator and author? And would you like to, you know, develop any of these points at all?
We have been working for quite a while, for almost 5 or 6 years. So the process has been various. It changed from the beginning to now. I am guilty to say that in the beginning, since I know a little bit of English, I wanted to control the process more than I do now. Because the poems, when I read a translation to Spanish or to French or to Italian, the poems seemed naturally more similar to Portuguese than they do with English, which is the only other language I was translated to that is not Roman. I have been translated to Polish and to South Korean, Macedonian and Croat and you name it, but I don't understand a single word from those languages. So with those translators, I just try to answer their questions and I have to believe that they translate the images and the rhythm, which are my two most important requests, that the images are translated and the music feels similar. But since I know a little bit of English, I tried to interfere with the process, and I don't think that's a good thing. You just have to trust. You just have to believe. And that's why the process with the Mediterranean and with the Nomad was a little bit different than the process with You Are Here and with Movement. I must say that it helped when we won the American prize, because after 4 years of Calvin working in the book, we managed to get the award. And it was like the ultimate proof for me that the book read well in English and that an independent jury evaluated the translation and trusted the translation and understood the meaning in such a way that the book won among almost 200 candidates from all over the world. And it was the first time that the translation won, not a book originally written in American English. Right now, me and Calvin, we are like those painters that they have in an atelier, 4 paintings started at the same time in different phases of the process. We have Mediterranean that already 42 or of its 44 poems have been accepted in magazines all around the world. We have Nomad, and it won the prize, so it will be out in Philadelphia probably still this year in autumn or in winter. We have Nomad, which is enrolled as a candidate for other presses, and we have almost 27 of its 43 poems accepted. Then we have You Are Here, which is a compilation of 4 previous books to Mediterranean. And now Calvin is working in Movement. We are just beginning the book, and there will be another book in January. So if he wants, he has plenty of work to do.
Thank you. Sounds like you've got your hands full, but very heartening to see Joao's poetry being advocated for in the English language market. As we all know, it's not easy to inspire interest and arouse interest for poetry and translation amongst English language publishers and readers. So great work that you're doing. We were almost finished, but let's have another poem then from the book. Go ahead and read us another poem from Movimento, Movement, please.
Machado de Mão de Guston. Parece lascado ontem este machado de mão, descoberto em Guston, num campo ao largo de Dover. Do lado de cada vitrina, nunca a idade da mão foi tão ávida de tocar a idade da pedra. O gesto recurvo dos dedos, próximo de acomodar uma ideia de movimento, o talhar de pele e ossos que o sílex cortava. Descanso os olhos na pedra num silêncio demorado, somente interrompido pela súbita vibração de um jovem objeto, com dezenas de milhares de anos, que me apresso a desligar.
Thank you very much. And Calvin, go ahead.
Hatchet from Guston. Looks like it fractured yesterday. This hatchet they discovered in Guston in a field on the outskirts of Dover. Out on this side of the glass, never has the hand age been so ravenous to grab hold of the Stone Age. The curved grab of fingers about to attempt some semblance of movement. The slashing of skin and bones at which the flint splintered. I rest my eyes on the rock in secular silence, only interrupted by the subtle vibration of a young object, just tens of thousands of years old, that I hurry to turn off.
Thank you very much. Before we finish, is there anything you'd like to say about that last poem, either of you? Perhaps Joao, would you like to comment on that poem?
It's an example of a poem that illustrates the process where I combine Chronos and Kairos, the ideal time and the chronological time, which is something I like a lot to do every time I can, because it establishes in the poem the strata that you can read and read the poem several times, and it just unveils other meanings on second and on third readings. And obviously, you don't explain what is the object mentioned in the final lines of the poem, but you realize that it took millions and millions of years to just to have it in your pocket.
Thank you. And Calvin, did you find that the poem was layered? Joao was saying that there were meanings that revealed themselves on additional readings.
I did, yeah. I love that Joao said this idea of, and I don't trace this as well in the book yet as I should, but this idea of human time versus geologic time, wherein we are just blips and we find ourselves to be so technological. And also, so this, it's a great melting pot of time in this thing. I am translating at a different time. It was written during a pandemic as when it was published. We have all these different things moving in and out. And then just say, here is a hatchet. And as I stare at this hatchet, my phone rings. And I read, you know, you do that same thing. I grew up in a place where there, I was in the woods a lot. And the fact that in Portuguese it's called, right, a hand axe is also great, where we have a specific word for it in English. And the word movement shows up for the first time in that poem. So we're not far in, but there are these time markers. And then also just the, you kind of get pushed into and out of the poem itself, because you have also probably had this experience, whether you were staring at the hatchet from Guston or something else. But that, yeah, it's all there. And it's just really, like I said, the whole book does this really enjoyable I've been there type of thing for the reader, and pushing that into English is, it's an adventure.
Thank you very much. You're doing great work, both of you. And yeah, we look forward to seeing Mediterranean coming out in this year or next. And we hope very much to see Movimento, Movement, in English translation soon. Thank you, Joao and Calvin, very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Bowery Poetry Speaks, an audio series of talks and performances with that special Bowery perspective. This series is executive produced by Traffica Europe Radio. Thanks for listening.